to Talking Beasts
from NarniaWeb.com,
where we explore the world of C.S. Lewis
and keep a watchful eye
on the latest Narnia movie news.
This is Talking Beasts.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Glumpuddle. Got a really fun topic, I think, for Narnia Webbers today. We're talking about our favorite performances by an actor in the Narnia movies. And here to help me do that is Movie Aristotle. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
As a longtime listener, first-time podcaster, you've been around Narnia Web how long exactly?
I've been on Narnia Web. I think I've been a member since around 2009. It was that period between Prince Caspian and Don Treader. I really started picking up on the movie news around that point for the Don Treader film.
And I feel like it's about time we've done this, honestly, because what listeners won't necessarily, of course, can't know is you hear the episode, you hear the usual discussions, but often the pregame and the postgame tends to be me and Movie Aristotle. And I think a lot of times, a lot of discussions we have end up becoming episodes. And so it's about time we finally did this, is what I'm trying to say.
I'm really looking forward to this. This is really exciting. So thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
Well, I'm looking forward to getting your perspective on this particular topic because, number one, you're an actor yourself.
Technically speaking, yes.
Yes.
Yes, I have acted. I have even gotten paid for acting, so I guess that technically makes me
a
professional performer, for what it's worth, but
you've gotten paid to be an actor. I've never gotten paid to be a podcaster. So if I'm a podcaster, you're an actor.
Okay, that makes sense.
There you go. So yeah, that was kind of the excuse of getting Movie Aristotle on the podcast. Okay, you'll bring a great perspective to this. And also, I want to watch you squirm, because usually it's really hard to get you to admit your favorites of something. I mean, you've never even told me your favorite Narnia book, right? You yourself don't know.
I say it's whichever one I'm reading.
Cop out.
It turns out to be that way. It just turns out to be that way. Like, even the books where I'm like, yeah, I'm not really into that one. Then I'll start reading it and I'll be like, this book is amazing. So, yeah, well, you didn't ask me what book was my favorite. So you're not going to get that answer today.
So when I sent you the email about we're going to come up with each of us rank our top five favorite performances in an Narnia movie, I sent the email and went, I can't wait to see what happens here.
I mean, I was coming up with my number five like minutes before this podcast,
yes,
trying to decide. And even then, I'm still a bit wishy-washy on that one.
And by the time this is edited and uploaded, it'll probably all be totally different.
It'll be different again.
On this particular day.
If you are one of the actors of this film and you didn't make the list today, you can
call in now and
call
maybe,
me tomorrow, and the list might be different.
But anyway, we should probably get started because we don't know. Like, there might be some I'm assuming, like, since we never disagree on anything, our list will probably be identical.
We've never disagreed on
2001 anything. Is your favorite film.
It is not. Just a little hint there.
So we'll see.
Although it would be hard to figure out what my favorite film actually is.
Well, maybe that's the next episode.
That's the next episode.
So that's the only way to get you to agree on a favorite anything is to get a microphone in front of you. Okay, let's get started because we could list as many as 10 actors or as many as 5 actors, depending on how much we disagree. We'll deal with the redundancy as we go. So we'll start with my number 5, my favorite, whatever that means, performances. And by the way, we're just limiting ourselves to the Walden Media Narnia movies. Mm-hmm. Thought about going, well, should we also include the focus on the family dramas and the animated movie and BBC, and that was too intimidating.
And the BBC radio dramas. Yeah. That was too much homework.
Maybe for you would have to rewatch
discussion.
Everything. So maybe just for the director's cut extended version of this podcast, we'll do that. But
no.
For now, we're just sticking to the Walden Media movies.
That's a totally different conversation, definitely.
Okay. So first on my list, starting off with one. So number 5.
Drum roll, please.
On my list. Starting off with one right away that was not so much controversial, but really unexpected. The actor was just not what anyone, including director Andrew Adamson, who cast him, kind of expected to be cast.
Everything from the lamppost all the way to Castle Caer Paravel on the Eastern Ocean. Every stick and stone you see, every icicle, is Narnia.
It's an awfully big wardrobe.
I'm sorry, please allow me to introduce myself. My name is Tumnus.
Number five on my list, James McAvoy as Tumnus. So Tumnus, of course, is one of the more iconic, despite having a very small role in the series, relatively, is such an iconic character in the book because of that image of the faun carrying the umbrella and parcels in a snowy wood. It's like, it's a small role, but you have to get it right. And so he was unexpected because, again, even Andrew Adamson was sort of, he's kind of young and good looking, and that's not what he imagined Tumnus to be.
I'm not sure that's what anyone really imagined Tumnus to be up until that point.
Uh-huh. And I think he brings an innocence to the character that I think works really, really well. And he does such a good job at, I think, developing this relationship with Georgie, this chemistry with Georgie immediately. They have a few quick scenes, but when they're saying goodbye, you feel like they have a real friendship here. And that's not easy to do.
And the actors had a real good friendship there as well while they were doing that. And I think that's important. I think it came across on screen.
Mm-hmm. So that's my number five. Did he make your list at all?
He actually did not make my list.
Okay.
Because there's so many great actors in
you hated
the franchise.
Him. What you hated James McAvoy.
I like James McAvoy. He did a good job in that film. You know, this list is complicated to come up with for yet another reason. For these particular films, it's not just human actors that we're talking about, or excuse me, human characters that we're talking about. We've also got these characters that are realized on screen by CG, but they're voiced by actors. And then you've got some characters that are actors in costumes, and then you've got perhaps a voice and perhaps some CG enhancements. And so you've got a lot of people involved.
Wait, what?
In order to create one performance. So this list is a bit
of an asterisk.
It's a hard thing to come up with, and
there's the director too on top of that.
And
the role does the director play.
Well, and every single person involved with the film. And so, I guess that's just a long preface to say that for my number five, I went with a different approach, and I went with a voice actor.
Oh, those aren't badges. Oh, I never thought I'd live to see this day. Look at my fur. You couldn't give me 10 minutes warning.
I would have given you a week if I thought it would have helped.
Oh, come inside, and we'll see if we can't get you some food and some civilized company.
Don French as Mrs. Beaver. It was really hard. It was like Mr. Beaver, Mrs. Beaver, Mr. Beaver, Mrs. Beaver. And they play a couple. And they play, you know, it's like a comedy team. So it's kind of like splitting up Abbott and Costello. I mean, it's just, you know, how do you choose which one for your list?
Interesting.
So, yeah, Ray Winstone, Dawn French. But I ultimately went with Dawn French because she portrays Mrs. Beaver with enough of the peculiarities of the character without going over the top.
Uh-huh.
There have been some other adaptations where Mrs. Beaver has maybe been played purely for laughs.
Mm-hmm.
And with Dawn, she got the comedy in, but she still felt like a real character. She felt grounded to me.
Mm-hmm. She's also in the Harry Potter movies, by the way. She's got she's got a brief role. I think it might just be in Prisoner of Azkaban, but she's one of the paintings at the entrance to the Gryffindor common room, I want to say. I don't know. So Dawn French. Okay.
There we go.
Number four for me is Skander Keynes as Edmund.
Do hereby challenge the usurper Miraz to single combat upon the field of battle. The fight shall be to the death. The reward shall be total surrender.
Tell me, Prince Edmund.
King.
Pardon me?
It's King Edmund, actually. Just King there. Peter's the High King. I know. It's confusing.
I watched the Turkish Delight scene. And when, you know, the witch says, you can have anything you want to eat. And he says, Turkish Delight? And he kind of goes, Turkish Delight? And he's got this look in his eye like it's a challenge. Like, well, could you do Turkish Delight? And everything he does, he's bringing something else to it that's probably not on the page. So I think that Skander is maybe the best kind of all-around actor in the movies, in terms of just, I feel like he could have gone on and had a great career, but instead he's a political advisor.
Oh, is that what he's up to now?
Yep.
All right. Well, Skander actually made my number one spot.
Spoiler! Wow.
So,
okay.
So, and it's for a lot of the reasons that you already mentioned. From watching the film, a few scenes that stuck out to me is take a look at the scene when the witch enters Aslan's camp. And there is such a look of fear on Skander's face.
Mm-hmm.
You feel it. Mm-hmm. He sells that scene for me because that scene is all about Edmund. What's going to happen to Edmund? And it's scenes like that that really impress me.
When he has no dialogue, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, he's got no dialogue. He's catching, not pitching.
Mm-hmm.
And so you might think that, you know, he might phone it in and there's mm-hmm. nothing to do. But no, he's there. He's in the moment. He's in the scene. Just a really, really good performance for me. There's a look of smugness or self-satisfaction on his face when he lies about going to Narnia for the first time.
What were you doing, Edmund?
I was just playing along. I'm sorry, Peter. I shouldn't have encouraged her, but you know what little children are like these days? They just don't know when to stop pretending.
And then even in Prince Caspian, now he has to portray a character who is wise beyond his years.
Yeah.
And it's...
That's a good point.
I think that's probably a hard thing for actors to do
mm-hmm.
that are that young. You know, how do you act older than you are? So playing this Edmund the Just, you know, someone who's made a huge mistake in his life but has come out wiser mm-hmm. and more righteous as a result,
yeah.
if that makes sense. You know, kind of more cognizant of right and wrong and what I should do. Skander nails that character.
Right. Okay. So that was my number four, and you were agreeing with that essentially. So mm-hmm. I guess let's go ahead and have you do your number four next.
My number four next. Okay. So this is kind of a left field choice.
My favorite.
So you can tell me in the comments what you think of this one, if you agree or disagree. But
they will. They will.
Yeah.
Thank you for your kindness. But I'm afraid that's all the cure I have time for.
You're leaving?
It has been a pleasure, my queen, and an honor. But time is short, and Aslan himself has asked me to gather more troops.
You've seen Aslan?
What's he like?
Like everything we've ever heard. You'll be glad to have him by your side in the battle against the witch.
My number four was actually Rupert Everett, who Ooh. Plays the fox in Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. The fox is in the book, although not anywhere near as active a participant in the storyline
as in the movie. But the fox never has enough character
exactly.
to be, you know, say, oh, you're playing that. I doubt Rupert Everett read the book and was like, oh, I was so inspired by that scene where...
I really want to play that fox.
The way he raises that goblet at the table. Oh, I want to play that guy. Anyway.
But the fox does get turned into stone in the book. He gets turned into stone in the movie. I actually care about the fox. And there's one line that really hit me in a right way in the movie theater, and that's when he says,
"Forgive me, Your Majesty."
Oh, don't waste my time with flattery.
Not to seem rude, but I wasn't actually talking to you.
Burn.
It was like, oh, wow. You know, because I think even at that point, Edmund hadn't quite realized, wait a second, these people are treating me like a king.
Right.
And it is, you know, it is... really an insult to the queen. So, you know, a character that I actually care about and also seeming fairly fox-like too. I mean, you know,
we can argue breeding later.
It seems right, you know, because when you think of foxes in, you know, like Aesop's fables or whatnot, they're kind of these trickster characters, but yet, you know, they have a wisdom to them. And yeah, Rupert plays that very well.
Okay. So two voices on your list so far. Very interesting. So that brings us to number three on my list, which was, in a way, the biggest surprise of the Prince Caspian movie for me.
I apologize, my lord. The blame is mine. I know.
Tell me, General. How many men did you lose?
None, my lord.
None?
They came like ghosts in the dead of night. We never saw them.
Pier Francisco Favino's performance as Glazel. Certainly, you read the Prince Caspian book, you don't really go into it going, oh, I can't wait to see what they do with Glazel, necessarily. But he really, again, just like what you tend to praise an actor's performance for. He brings a lot to it that's not necessarily on the page. There's a lot of nonverbal stuff happening between him and Sergio Castellito playing Miraz. And just that struggle he has where he's going along with this because he has to. He knows this is wrong, but he's resigned to the fact that, I guess this is the only way to be a Telmarine king. I guess this is the only way to do it. And the surprise he sees in his eyes when Caspian spares Miraz's life, and it's like, maybe this isn't the only way to rule a kingdom. Pier Francisco brings that to life really well. It's not at all what the character is in the book, but I think it adds a lot to the movie.
Movies are primarily about the picture, mm-hmm. Unlike stage plays, where I would argue it's more about what you're hearing, the dialogue that you're hearing. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to emote like that and get the idea across without saying any words is definitely a skill, and it's definitely a skill that man has.
Yeah. All right, so you're number three.
My number three.
Are your sisters deaf?
No.
And your brother, is he unintelligent?
Well, I think so. But Mum says...
Then how dare you come alone?
I tried.
Edmund, I ask so little of you.
They just don't listen to me.
Couldn't even do that.
Oh, I did bring them halfway.
It might be a bit surprising that she's so far down on this list, but right in the middle of my top five is Tilda Swinton, who portrayed the White Witch in all three films, I guess.
Don't remind me. Sorry.
Well, it's not like she did a bad job films.
It wasn't
it's
her
just
fault.
That you disagree with the adaptation.
No offense, Tilda. I just wish you weren't in this movie.
That's a hard place to be as a fan, isn't it? Like, you did a great job. Why are you in this film? But yeah, as far as... I think we can both agree that her character in The Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, I think her acting was well done. I think it was somewhat original take on the White Witch, but... fairly consistent and intriguing. And to me, that's what Tilda brings to that role, is there's more going on beyond what she's just saying. And you just feel like this is a very calculated individual. It's a very smart person. There's more bubbling beneath the surface.
Yeah, Tilda Swinton was one that was hovering over... five, you know, is she five or six for me? Like, is she an honorable mention or is she on the list? She came close. In a way, it's her performance isn't all that memorable to me. That's almost a compliment, though, because it'd be very easy to go the Barbara Kellerman route, which some people listening will approve of the Barbara Kellerman performance in the BBC versions. I personally think what Tilda did was a little more effective, and to have she's quiet, she's in control, and that's scarier than someone who doesn't have any control, who just can just lose her temper. And the fact that Tilda is so, like the fact that Edmund walks in and is sitting on her throne and she doesn't immediately lose it. She's kind of like, what she's doing is very deliberate. She's not acting out of emotion. She's thought through what she's doing and she still does it. That's how evil she is. So we're down to number two on my list.
All right.
Finally, got there. This one seems obvious in a way, certainly to some of our listeners looking at the poll on the Facebook group, but this particular actor was very, very high. Such an important one in this movie and the whole series. Like, if you don't get this part right, the movie's not going to work.
Winter's not all bad. There's ice skating and snowball fights. Oh, and Christmas.
Not here. No. No, we haven't had a Christmas
in 100 years.
What? No presents for 100 years?
Georgie Henley is Lucy. It almost seems like I'm kind of, what can I say that hasn't already been said? She basically solved a plot problem in a way. I think realistically, when you're watching a movie, little girl finds this mysterious land in the wardrobe, she's probably going to run and find someone, or what the heck, what's in here? I might be a little scared. Or at the very least, when she sees the fawn come along, she's going to do what she does. Yeah, scream, but then like run away, not want to be friends with it. That seems like probably more realistic. But Georgie makes me believe that, I mean, I think it's perfect that she initially, which wasn't planned, she screams when she sees James McAvoy in costume. That's her initial reaction. And then she, were you hiding from me? Again, she's at that line, one of my favorite lines in the movie. She says, were you hiding from me? Which the subtext is, I mean, shouldn't I be the one hiding from you? You're the scary monster here.
Right.
Lucy in the movie is maybe the only character where I can say that it really she really impacted the way I read the book. When I read the book, I'm picturing Georgie Henley, even though that's wrong. Lucy should have blonde hair. I'm still picturing Georgie Henley because it just felt so right. And she was one that was such an important day for fans when it was that the four children were announced and everyone saw Georgie and went, this just feels right, even just seeing her in pictures.
I have to say, when I first saw, I don't know when I first saw Georgie as Lucy, it might have been in the trailer, but to me, she fit my imagination. Uh-huh. It was perfect. And she did a very, very good job, which is why she also made my number two.
Oh, okay.
There's the line that she says,
when he shakes his mane, we shall have spring again. Everyone we knew, Mr. Thomas and the beavers, they're all gone.
I mean, it really does feel like she spent years in Narnia and all these people that she knew are gone, and she's acting like an adult.
Uh-huh.
Coming to that realization. Yeah. Not like a kid.
Uh-huh.
You know, oh, all my friends, they're all dead now.
Right.
I mean, there's she doesn't approach it the way that a child would deal with that sort of a weight, mm-hmm, being dropped on them. She comes at it from this sort of an adult perspective, which I think is how did she do that?
Yeah.
How did they get, uh-huh, her to portray, uh-huh, it that way?
And that really, it helps the story so much because, again, we remember the Lucy from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Remember how in awe she was, and we remember the innocence. And then to see that crushed with everyone we knew is gone, and that's what the whole Prince Caspian story is about, is the old days are gone. That's been, poof, swept away, and things that we didn't think it happened in Narnia. Horrible things are now happening. And I think that comes through. So I think most people would agree that like Georgie or Lucy might be at the top of, if you get one character right, please get Lucy right.
Right.
And so it was such a relief when they did a really good job on Lucy.
Well, and even in Don Treader, the scene between her and Reepicheep Cheep towards the beginning of the film, where they're talking about the edge of the world, It's
even in Don Treader.
It's wow. It's one of the best scenes in the film, I think, where they're just having this discussion. And yeah, I totally agree. Georgie is number two on my list.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we agreed on something.
And you already know who's number one on my list.
That's right. So your list is complete, and the two we have agreed on so far are Georgie. And that's it, actually. That's the only... Oh, sorry, Georgie and Skander.
They're both on our list.
Both on our list, yeah. And so that just leaves... and your number one was Skander.
Mm-hmm.
And that just leaves my number one.
Anticipation.
Yes. This was a surprise even for me.
Okay.
And it was one of those... My process, I went just very, very quickly and made a list of, okay, this could be in my top five, and then just slowly started kind of moving them around.
I'm getting my surprised face ready.
Okay. But take our word for it. There's a surprise face coming. You'll just... I don't think you probably won't hear it. So,
you know, in the forum has such great emoticons, don't they? Or emojis. I tell you.
Yeah, it's true.
It's so.
Those don't work for audio, though. Sorry.
They don't work for audio.
No. So I was just kind of moving them around and slowly just kind of went, I think this one's. Is that going to be my number one? Is that just not going to move? And sure enough, I went, I guess, yeah, but by default, I guess that's my number one. This is a really small role in the movie. Mm. But giving it number one because of. I love watching this scene so much, and it could have gone wrong on so many levels. And you're probably, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you might be picking up on who I'm talking about. But this could have, it's a small role, but if you don't get it right, it could derail the whole movie.
Well, I'm a longtime listener, and I don't know where you're going with this one.
Okay.
I'm excited.
Certainly is, Lucy, since you have arrived.
Look, I've put up with a lot since I got here, but this...
We thought you were the witch.
Yes, I'm sorry about that, but in my defense, I have been driving one of these longer than the witch.
James Cosmo as Father Christmas is actually my number one.
That makes sense.
So this is a scene where... Suddenly, you know, it's the first movie in a series. There's a lot of world building going on, and all of a sudden, Santa Claus shows up.
He does.
It could, if you don't get that right, that could just absolutely derail the entire thing. I mean, I think it, if even the positive reviews would have to say, but then there's that scene where Santa Claus shows up. Like, it would completely derail the movie. And what he does, he brings this quiet dignity to it. But in a way that doesn't betray the image that even I, as an American, have of Santa Claus.
These are tools, not toys. Bear them well and wisely. Now, I must be off. Winter is almost over. Things do pile up when you've been gone 100 years. Long live Aslan. And Merry Christmas!
I think if I had directed that scene, I would have been really conservative about it. I would have said, hey, let's tone down the jolliness as much as we can. Let's just have be this kind of quiet guy. You could crack a smile once or twice. That's okay. But he has this laughter and he says, and Merry Christmas! That still feels like Santa Claus to me, but brings this dignity and reality to it. In other words, he's not doing, oh, this is the realistic version of Santa Claus. And he's not doing the Santa Claus from the Coke commercials. He's doing just almost like both at the same time.
He's not Tim Allen.
Right. Okay.
He's not going for the super comic right. version.
Right.
And yet he has that sort of, I hesitate to say fairy tale quality, but that sort of fantasy quality, I guess.
He really, he's 100%, this is the real version of the character, and 100%, this is the character I recognize. In other words, he's basically the myth becoming fact.
Exactly. There you go. That's a great way to put
it. He embodies kind of what James Cosmo's performance and the betrayal of Father Christmas just embodies what I love about the Narnia books in the first place, that it's both at the same time. And I don't think any of the betrayals of the Narnia movies nail it so much as Father Christmas, as James Cosmo did as Father Christmas. And when I think about, on top of that, how wrong it could easily have gone, what would have happened if he hadn't gotten that right, and the fact that it's just one scene but stands out so much in my memory as being something special and unique, all those things together make me go, yeah, I think that is my favorite performance out of all the Narnia movies. It might be my favorite scene out of any of the movies, actually.
It's part of what makes Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe unique. And then it also has the added right. Benefit of now Disney can show it around Christmas time every year, and it doesn't seem completely out of place.
Which is a huge
Christmas
priority
movie.
For me, to make sure Disney can make money all the time. So yeah,
they got to make a buck somehow, right?
Poor Disney.
Which, interestingly, now that they own Fox, they have all three Narnia films now.
Yep. We could see a Father Christmas a spinoff series on Disney Plus.
I'm not sure that's how it works, but we could see all three Narnia films on Disney Plus.
I guess so, yeah.
I kind of wonder if when Netflix finally does have their version available, if Disney Plus isn't also going to say, oh, hey, remember us? We have all three films over here too.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That'll be interesting to see play out.
Right. And that just leaves some honorable mentions. For my honorable mentions, I had Tilda Swinton as the White Witch, of course, Sergio Castellito as Miraz, then Eddie Izzard as the voice of Reepicheep Cheep in Prince Caspian. I thought he did a better job than Simon Pegg and Don Treader. And then finally, Douglas Gresham as the radio announcer. Of course, who could forget?
I was thinking when I was watching that, I'm like, he is a really good radio announcer.
Speaking of casting Easter eggs, by the way, I totally forgot that Tilda Swinton plays a centaur in the Prince Caspian movie. You'll see here when they're after the good guys have won and they're entering the city, that little parade, there's one shot where you see Tilda as a centaur, and I totally forgot about that. So just throwing that out there.
So if you were looking at a centaur in the background of that one scene, you're like, man, that was a really great portrayal of a centaur. You can thank Tilda Swinton.
And for those of you that looked at the BBC versions and said, but the Lady of the Green Curl and the White Witch are played by the same actress.
Oh,
they must be the same.
Oh, no.
Let the fan theories go.
Oh,
how
no.
did the White Witch become a centaur? How did this happen? And
don't
can
even,
Disney Plus answer it with a spinoff series, perhaps?
Don't even open that box, please.
I've opened it. It's too late. That's what we do on Narnia Web, and sometimes we regret it.
A lot of times we regret it.
All right, honorable mentions for you.
But I have Anna Popplewell, who played Susan, of course. I've got both Eddie Izzard and Simon Pegg for Reap a Cheap. I've got, you know, his name, I believe, is Gomez Sandoval, and he plays the centaur boy in Prince Caspian. They even gave him a name of Lightning Bolt, but he just makes me smile.
He sees Sindon's son, right?
He is related to someone.
Isn't
in the
he
production.
The isn't he the one who lifts the sword?
Yes.
They almost decapitates the kings and queens. Yeah, he sees Mucindan's son.
It's
costume designer.
I mean, it's just a little moment, but it just adds so much to that.
So you actually
movie.
Gave him an honorable mention?
I gave him an honorable mention.
Okay, why not?
This is my favorite list. This is what makes the movie for me. Gary Sweet as Drinian. Tony Nixon, also in Don Treader as the first mate. Bruce Spence as Roop.
Who I wanted as Puddleglum, actually. Even before he was cast in Narnia, I was like, I think he'd be a good Puddleglum. Post a comment below if you disagree with us, or if you say, what? Why wasn't blank on the list, or whatever? Or I'm sure there's a number of you, actually, who can't believe the episode's over and we have not mentioned Will Poulter at all. I'll just address it, since there's a lot of people that love Will Poulter. I enjoyed Will Poulter's performance just fine, but I didn't blow me away like he did a lot of other fans. And I don't feel like, oh, he's the only one that could play Eustace or anything. I would love to see someone else put their take on it. That's just my opinion. And it is now your duty to inform the world how wrong I am in the comments section. Now, the only thing I want to ask you before we wrap up here is...
And now it's time for something else. The part of the show where Narnia Webbers talk about something else.
This topic was, for something else, was inspired by an article I totally forgot about that you sent me from, what, 2005, right?
2010.
Oh, 2010?
2010.
Okay.
This was after Don Treader.
Okay. So after Don Treader came out, and it just basically, it was Narnia Web founder Tyrion posted an article saying, please stop emailing us asking, how do I get a role in the movies? But you're an actor, so if anyone happens to be listening saying, how would I go about getting a role in a movie like this? What would you have to say?
Well, this is a great time to start asking yourself that question, because the Netflix productions are not in full swing yet.
Far from it.
It sounds like we're in early stages of pre-production. And so now's the time to start thinking about if you actually want to be in a Narnia production, how to get there. I would definitely recommend going back and looking at Tyrion's article from December 22nd, 2010. It's called Advice, Auditioning for the Role of Jill Pole. But this advice goes for any character that you're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
I just have to echo a lot of what he said as far as you want to have an agent is going to help you a lot. And so when someone is interviewing somebody for a job, what do they look at? They look at their skills. They look at their past experience and things like that. So that's why I say now is a good time if you really are serious about getting into these Netflix productions. Now's when you want to start building that resume. And there are probably opportunities in your area to do some sort of acting. There might be a community theater. There might be some sort of a regional theater or something like that. There might your community might be a filmmaking community, and so there might be some opportunities there. But you want to start thinking ahead. You don't want to wait until the casting call comes out and then say, "Oh, I want to do that," because you might not have a high success rate with that.
Mm-hmm. What about social media? Is there a way people can utilize, as an actor, aspiring actor, can utilize social media and the internet to maybe get noticed or something like that? Would you have any advice or perspective on that?
Not from my personal experience. This goes from hearsay. Professionals say, yeah, just go ahead and do something. Like, you don't have an excuse anymore to not act. You know, we have YouTube, we have cameras, camcorders. What do we call them these days?
Camera still works.
We have cameras. We have phones. In our phones.
We have phones. We used to call them cameras. Now we just call them phones.
Now we call them phones. But, you know, we have these at our disposal. And so if you want to be acting, if you want to be producing, you can just do it. You can just start doing it. You don't have to wait for anybody else. You just go out there and do it. You know, and some people do podcasts. You know, they just say, you know what? I could do a podcast. And then what do you know? They have
the next thing you know, they're playing the White Witch. When before they were just a Narnia podcast host.
You know, I kind of want to see your portrayal of the White Witch now.
I'll work on that. Because how cool would it be to have a Narnia Weber in a major role in a Narnia movie?
That would be very cool.
We did, as an April Fool's joke, we did say that Kumri had been cast in the Prince Caspian movie, and she got as far as getting an IMDb page before it was, people went, oh, this was a joke. Back then, IMDb was even more than it is today, the incompetent movie database. So that wasn't a shock, but hey, I guess there's hope.
There is
hope.
Just
saying, it seemed plausible at the time. Okay, if you want to put your best foot forward and audition for the role of outro reader, we can see how well you can do. So,
all right.
Just do what you want.
Do what I want as an outro reader.
Improvise. Okay.
All right, here we go.
You've been listening to Talking Beasts, a NarniWeb.com podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please consider sharing it with a friend. And be sure to subscribe and post a comment below or in the Talking Beasts Facebook group. You can also email us at podcast@narniweb.com or glumpuddle@narniweb.com. For the latest Netflix Narnia news, visit narniweb.com. Until next time, further up and further in.